Okay.
This is Bill Paul in London, Ontario, Canada, talking with very important... No, sorry, start again. This is Bill Paul in London, Ontario, Canada, and we're talking with very interesting people, VIPs. And on our first show, we are talking with Mark Stanton Welch, live from California. And he's in San Luis Obispo, near Morro Bay, and he's going to be coming to Canada soon. He's a renowned music and sound healer, alchemist, teacher, and mentor. And we're very proud to have with us as our first guest, Mark Stanton Welch. And Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Bill. What a delight to be here.
Now, tell us, I'm wondering, we know what music is and how it can soothe the savage breast. I'm wondering what a music sound healer alchemist is.
Wow, what a loaded question. That'll probably take the whole half hour, but I'll see if I can be real succinct with this. It's all based on the notion, Bill, that there is vibration, that everything is vibration. This is measured by physics and contemporary science. And based on that, we see how the capacity of sound to actually impact the cells of the body. Since all is vibration, there's certain principles like resonance and harmony and those kinds of things that actually create the opportunity for the sound to be felt. And a musician who is going to go ahead and use sound as a healing tool or to use music as a healing tool is calling upon those capacities. So what I do in two different ways is to take the songs themselves and make the song so that they resonate with particular parts of the body where I am going to send the information. And it's kind of based on themes. If I have a song that's based on, let's say, working with grief or sadness or opening up someone's heart, then I will be using a particular key, which is usually F, because that's a key that resonates with what's called the chakra of that system. So when I write music within that framework, then I know that immediately the key is going to impact the person, and then it's up to me to create a melody that would engage and to also have lyrics that support the intent of the song. If I'm just working with sound, Bill, I'm just basically going to use pitches and frequencies and follow, in a sense, what I'm considering my own guidance or listening and tuning in to what the person might be giving me energetically to use particular tones, and that can be a pure tone through the voice. It can be using things like Tibetan bells. It can be using quartz bowls. It can be using rattles, drums, anything related that actually makes sound. And those are some ways that I could actually go ahead and impact and to bring back to the, we'll call it the full rate of vibration for this person, then bring them back into a state of harmony and balance.
So now, this sounds fairly modern, but I can also see how it might relate to ancient civilizations, the Egyptians, the Sumerians, tribes in Africa who used drumming and various kinds of instruments to reach people deep into their soul.
Indeed. It really goes back. That's where the information is coming from. This stuff has been around as long as humans have been here, and actually even before, because the vibration has been there. And tuning into it, if you call it just the shamans, if you call them the medicine men, whoever the ones that were in a particular culture that had access to the awareness, in other words, their hearts were open and they hadn't been infused with misinformation, and they were able to tap into what's called the sound current. And because of that, they were then able to go ahead and work people through challenges. They were able to work people through, you know, physical challenges, emotional challenges, and mental as well. So I've gone back and borrowed from a lot of different cultures through the use of mantra, spoken words with an intention, or through chants, or through the modernization of it, which is to create something I call an intentional song, which is like to take an affirmation and then to run it in a cycle over and over so that it begins to impact the subconscious with a new way of thinking. So I borrow on ancient cultures all the time. And the beauty of evolution, though, is that it seems that there's new information added because of the nature of vibration. There's greater awareness now in some ways to assimilate all those old cultures. And once one steps away from, let's say, the biases toward the modern culture as being the most advanced, which I don't agree with, there are certain ways, of course, but there is so much richness coming from the ethnic communities and from the civilizations of the past, that I would be a fool not to bring that in and acknowledge it.
Now, I'm also wondering the different kinds of music. Obviously, over the years, we've developed thousands of different musical instruments, and yeah, many of them have gone on to be electronic musical instruments, electric, and various kinds of things using, I don't know, lasers and everything else. I'm wondering if the different quality of music reaches people in different parts of their body and different parts of their soul. For instance, the difference between acoustic and electronic music.
Well, you're absolutely right. You know, both have their purpose, and I actually lean on both. The palette of sound that I can get from, let's say, a synthesizer or a program on the computer that can deliver different tones and samples is unprecedented in time. And yet, there's nothing like the actual being in the room with an acoustic instrument. Certainly, things can even happen over the phone where energies are shifted, but because being with the person allows the resonance of the instrument, the actual material of it, to the wood of the violin, so to speak, to actually penetrate into the cells, or whether it's even tuning forks or whatever that you're using in person, typically has a much more profound and quicker impact on someone than electronic music will.
I'm also wondering about the environment that you're playing music in, because I've been to house concerts that are intimate things of maybe 10 to 50 people in an intimate setting, and then I've been to concerts with, 10,000 to 100,000 people and huge towers of power to unleash the music on people, and it grips them in a more visceral way. So I'm wondering environment of the music and the way it's transmitted can reach people in a different way.
Yes, it can. And I think you've touched on it. See, the power of a large group is that it amplifies the sound really through the bodies of the people there. And their intentions and their collective commitment to the experience really amplifies in a way that something that intimate would not be able to do. Having said that, if you really want to have music that is able to penetrate on an intimate level, that is able to collectively take the energies of those people that have showed up as an audience in an intimate setting. And I say that because oftentimes when an event is put on, say like a house concert, the people that are drawn to it are typically going to have similar issues in their life. And then as a musician, I can go ahead and tune into what that might be and then feed them music that I know is going to help impact that energy to help release it and clear it out. So that's something that can be done, and I have not performed yet in a 50,000 seat arena, and so I don't know that experience, though I've been to many concerts where I collectively felt that, I guess, the community energy that was very profound. And then if my ears stopped ringing afterwards, then once that happened, then I was able to actually integrate the whole experience. So environment is critical. And in fact, when I do workshops, when I do events, I'm really paying attention to the environment itself by bringing in everything that would energetically support it, support the music.
Now, I would think that much of music is healing just by the fact that you are reaching out and communicating to people and tapping into them and to their emotions. Maybe they remember a song from a certain point in their life, or perhaps they're hearing it for the first time, but either the words or the melody really touch them. Yeah. And there's healing qualities for many, many bands and solo performers that way. But you are a sound healer. So how does that inform your music?
I believe, in many ways it's by the specific intention. And I alluded to it earlier when I said that, a song is a combination of elements. It's the combination of the intention of the writer and what was in place when they started to do it, the key of the song, the rhythm of the song or the tempo of it, how fast it's going, and whether it aligns with the body, the key that's going to impact where it is within the particular body in terms of the intention of the message, then the message itself, and then on top of that, the arrangement in terms of like the harmonic structure, the harmonies that are used. Various harmonies have various impacts upon the actual physical system. So you know, in a, it is true that all music has a healing potential about it. Some music is very confrontive. Some music really demands the attention of the body, and if it's sustained over long periods of time, can actually begin to damage some of the particles in the body and some of the cells because of the intensity of it. So in regulated doses, all music is going to have its impact and also have its use. The greatest challenge, especially with music that's coming from what we'll call a negative energy, is stuff that basically is promoting messages that are kind of anti-life, that are not about the inner support and the celebration of the human being. They're more about the denigration of various elements. And I'm not here to cast any judgment, because I know every music has its purpose. Someone who's attracted to a music that feels darker certainly is using it to go ahead and help clear some energies out with them in a way that maybe they don't understand, but it actually is quite effective. The challenge is to know when to say no to it. And that's why when you wake up with a song that's running around in your head, it's going to be there for as long as it is, and then it'll be replaced probably by something else. If we learn to listen to the messages that are coming through these songs, we realize, in a sense, what our body and what our spirit and all our energy bodies are calling for. And then we can actually begin to support that by feeding similar messages to ourselves in the name of actually getting clearer, which means getting lighter and more capable to use the truth of who we are in whatever moment we're facing.
Now, you're also thought of as a sound healer alchemist. And when I think of alchemy, I think of somebody, an ancient druid, turning lead into gold or something. What do you turn into something else?
Well, basically, let's put it this way. I work with energy. And energy is basically, let's call it, there's a certain body design that through my own experience and own moments of living I've come up with. And it's not unique in a big sense, but it certainly does not go along with the standard way of looking at things. Let's say that as a little boy I had events occur and I wanted to say something, I wanted to have an experience, I wanted to express myself, and that information and that opportunity was, let's just say, dissuaded or forced to not happen. And so I had to swallow that energy. I had to swallow the unexpressed words. As far as I can see and understand and have felt, the body has a tendency, along with the chakra system, the energy system, to store that energy until it can release. And it will store it for a period of time until it can really do no more. And it will continue to try and get our attention through sensation with the body, through an opportunity to get our attention to release, through pain, through numbness. There's a lot of different ways that the body can speak. If I listen to it, I can help to clear that energy up. If I don't listen to it, then what's going to happen, it's going to knock louder. And as a result of that, the energy begins to solidify because it's slowing down in vibration. So it approaches a physical form as opposed to be, let's say, an etheric form. So by alchemizing, basically what I'm doing with the music is to go in and to assist the body in releasing all of this stored energy that I consider toxic debris. It's the stuff from which patterns are made, from which beliefs are made, through which limitations are put into place, and we buy into them as if that's the way it is, because that's just the way it is, but it really isn't. The alchemy is about releasing and clearing out the old information, which then can be replaced by the truth of what the person is, which really has been lost or misplaced along the way because of the things that occurred. So it's energy-based. It is about, in a sense, turning lead to gold, because the lead is like the old energy that's of lower frequency. And by clearing it, it allows the inner being to have its time in the sun, to turn to gold, to be present, to be fully in expression.
Now, you've worked with personal growth and expansion leaders such as Sonia Chiquette and Marianne Williamson, Louisa Capcioni, and one I've interviewed myself, Wayne Dyer. And I'm wondering how you fell into their company and got motivated to be motivational.
Okay. That's a fair question. I have been... Gosh, we're going on over 20 years ago, I began to see through the use of my music how I could impact not only an audience, but let's say a workshop, that I could take content that I was teaching in the workshop and actually turn it into a short, singable song, kind of like a chant, but it was an affirmation in a sense that it had content from the workshop. And I found how quickly people were able to not only learn the song, but to sing it and then to walk out with the information in their cells. I figured that somebody on the big circuit would be interested in such a capacity. And so I began to approach a bunch of the New Thought authors at the time. And I happened to be in San Luis Obispo, where we had a very vibrant Unity Church. It was up to 600 and two or three services, eventually three services during the day. And we had the capacity to start bringing a lot of guests in and supporting big events with them. And it wasn't a rider on the contract, but basically because it was my church, it gave me an opportunity to share music as a warm-up, if you will, for any of these people. And every time I did that, I would write songs based upon their work, something that would support the vibration of their evening. And then I would basically present to them the idea of what I could offer and would they be interested. And I did that over and over with all of those you mentioned, and the first one who actually got it and who was open to it was Sonia Choquette. And because of that, we were then able to travel for almost 15 years, where I would take her content, turn it into music, and then we do the combination of the speaking and the music. And at the time, it was very profound in how it impacted the audiences, because in that circle, most of it was really just talk, or background ambiance, or somebody doing a meditation, and there was some noodling on the keyboard, which is beautiful. But this was actually engaging the audience, engaging their intent, and pulling them in with information and messages that were impacting them on a very, very powerful level. And I think one of the most beautiful things was to see how Sonia and I were able to work and follow the flow of that, where I would really pay attention to how she was delivering and what she was delivering and the information, and then I'd weave a song into it, and then she began to pace off of me, and then I would pace off of her. And so all the while, the audience is in the receptive mode of experiencing this, and it became very powerful in a very short time. So it was a beautiful experience.
I'm also interested in the relationship between music and memory, because I have done a lot of acting in my career, and when I was in dramatic productions where you had to learn dozens of lines, I found that very difficult. Yeah. But if I was in a musical, which might have 10 times as many lines, but they were all songs, I had no problem at all. I could memorize the songs, snappy tunes, memorize the words to go with the music. And my mind just seemed to be able to relate to that a lot better. And the same thing with poetry. I find poetry a little bit boring, a little bit threatening. You got to learn lines of poems. But if you set those poems to music, all of a sudden I have no problem learning the songs, which were just poems seconds ago.
You know how I respond with that? It feels in many ways like it's a left brain, right brain thing. The left brain being so conditioned to analyze and to struggle with things and put things into an, let's say, a hierarchical form, and also replete with the memory of all the times that did or did not work, creates additional stress that goes right against what your intention is. When it slips into the right brain, that's where music does its dance. It goes in there and it allows itself to flow, and it's almost like a holographic energy there. It's a holographic memory where it just goes and it's pulled in many ways, just kind of through the ethers and through the energy bodies themselves. And so I am actually in the flow of the vibration when I am in the song. When I am in just words, I am probably too analytical. Now, that doesn't have to say that it's always that way, because a lot of poetry and a lot of spirited reading can come from that right brain energy. There are just two beautiful parts of us, and each has their purpose, and yet Western civilization especially has focused pretty exclusively on left brain and getting things done and all of that. And that's all well and good, because beautiful things have occurred, and it has also come at a cost. The creative energy is not something that's unique to just the chosen few. It's something that's available to all of us, because that's how we are designed and how we're wired. We just aren't given permission to step into that. And because of the experiences that happen, whether they're positive or negative, typically the negative or the lower frequency response will keep us from taking risks in the future. And so we get a pattern going. Music takes us out of that. It's like there were in the past in country music a couple great stutterers when they talked. But when they started to go ahead and sing, all the stuttering was gone. Even though they were singing the same spoken word patterns that they would stutter on, when they put it to song, it was a totally different experience. something magical is occurring. And I think it's just entering into the bigger part of who we are, which we haven't really been given permission much to go there.
When you write a healing song, is it for general purposes, or could you actually write a song for a specific person with specific problems, so you would use certain words and modalities to reach that particular person?
Yeah, I've done both, and both are very, very potent. For example, just a little four-liner that I would use for general population would be something, I give a little love, I give a little light, it comes back round and I feel all right. Ah, life is good. Ah, life is good. By recycling that idea, what begins to happen is we begin to replace some of the thinking where we begin to, that we used to use with this song, because the song will start to feed itself on the inside. Now, I've had individuals come up to me, and for whatever reason, they have had asked me to write certain songs for them, and I do it. And the way that I do it is to actually do an interview with them, and I'll find out what's going on, and I'll look for the words, I'll look for the situation that I really want to focus on and address, and I'll make that what's called the hook. I'll make that the thing that we come back to in terms of the chorus. It's always affirmative. It's always uplifting in terms of the intention of the song. And the mood and the key and all of that, again, is based upon the principles that I understand in terms of where to place it, depending on the kind of healing energy that I want it to have. And the beauty of that is that it's a very unique experience, not only for me, but also for them. And I've used a lot of great melodies one time for the purpose of a song for just one person. It's been very gratifying and very supportive for where they were and where they were going. I really enjoy both. But what I find in terms of creativity and writing a song is I've just really learned to trust the moment and trust what is there. And I don't do rewrites on songs because I trust that what has come in is most of the time, actually for me all
I'm
of the
also
time.
Wondering about you're singing to someone and they derive a therapeutic resolution out of that. Is there also the sing-in-response kind of thing? I've been involved with that. That's very gratifying, where
yeah.
You're actually participating actively in the song. You're doing maybe the choruses while the singer is singing all the in-between stuff, and then he gets the people singing the choruses, which gives them a nice life-affirming energy. And then there's the other one, which becomes gradually, if they learn the song, it becomes a sing-along, and then you're all singing together.
Yeah. I mean, these are all beautiful ways to do it, and typically that will occur. I do a whole lot of call and answer, mostly for the purpose of teaching the song. And once they have it, the unification of all of the voices and the collective intention really makes the song rise to its potential. And as a songwriter, whether it's a four-liner or something that has much more of a story to it, it's very gratifying and very fulfilling, and it keeps me doing my work.
Now, you've also been and are a teacher and a mentor, and how does that come to play?
My teaching came from being an elementary school teacher in public school for about 17 years back in the 70s and 80s. And little did I know, at least on my conscious level, the school where I taught was the place I went to as a boy. And so I realized that when I went there at some point that I was actually doing some healing work for myself. I didn't know the depth of it that I know now, and I didn't understand it so much, but I kept showing up and kept being an active part of the playground activity. And everything I could do to heal, you know, some wounds and some self-esteem issues that I had grown up with. And I found that that vehicle was very, very potent, and it enabled also the kids to connect with me on a very deep level. And so that the what I learned as a teacher in elementary school, not only for myself, but also in how to relate to human beings, I bring into all the work that I do. I work all the time with either, you know, there are certain years where it's nothing but working with kids under 10 years old, and then the other years it's teenagers, and then other years, or, you know, it's a combination of adults, teens, etc. And I feel comfortable in any of those places because humans are humans in many ways in terms of the way that they can receive information and allow it to be a part of them. I work in what's called multimodalities, so I really know that some people learn best by seeing and some learn best by hearing. and some need to touch and to dance and to get it into their system. So I make sure that whatever I do, I'm going to address all of those systems so that everybody gets the same opportunity to integrate, you know, the collective messages that are going on.
I think it's really key that you work with primary or elementary school children, because I have the philosophy that the younger you are, the easier it is for you to learn, because you haven't developed your bad habits yet, you haven't developed your ego that blocks you yet, and you haven't realized what things are difficult or impossible to do, so you can do them. When we get older, we discover our ego, we discover things to block ourselves from learning, and we develop bad habits that stop us. So I'm wondering if, when you are teaching people, if you have to reach into their, find that inner child to help them learn faster.
Really, it's a primary element of the work that I do. And you do that really through, you know, a variety of ways. One is music and sing-alongs. I mean, it really brings back the child part. And to move a little bit and to invite them to take risks and to be a part of that is a very potent element of what it is that I do. But it really is about getting back to that inner child self. And, you know, there's been various movements in relation to inner child that started with the work of John Bradshaw and others back in the late 70s into the 80s in terms of the 12-step programs. And it was very foundational. And then it moved on to the work of actually my landlady upstairs, Lucia Cappuccioni, who pioneered a process of accessing the inner child with the non-dominant handwriting. And having participated in that and been a part of that with her, it opened me up to the very, very necessity of doing whatever I could to get back to that child part, to go ahead and clear out some of those woundings and some of those decisions and some of those habits that you're referring to. Because so many decisions are made by that child part of us as a survival tool. And we think that's who we are, when really it isn't. It was something that was really put into place. I find, especially in these times, Bill, is that people are wanting to return to that place, to return to the place of the childlike wonder and imagination, but still have their capacity as an adult to pay attention to things and to do what must be done, but to begin to combine the two of them. And honestly, that's where music and movement and chanting and drumming and all of these things bring both pieces into play. And that's, in so many ways, the rewards and the gifts of the work that I do for me.
Now, you're going to be coming to London, Ontario, Canada soon, and you do not do a lot of work in Canada, so this is quite special.
It is quite special, and I'm very, very grateful for the opportunity from Sharon to get me up there. We've been doing a little bit of work together, and it has spoken to her enough that she said she wants me to come up and share some things up there, so I'm delighted. I have been, Sonia Choquette and I actually traveled a bit up there, through a particular organization that right now, I think the Learning Annex or something, through the years. We had a couple tours. So I've been to more times to Vancouver, a couple times to Edmonton. I've been to Calgary. We did a couple things in Toronto. But that's the extent of it. And I never was up there for more than really just a weekend, staying in a hotel to get things done. But now I'm down in the streets, and that's the beauty of this trip, is we have a whole bunch of things in place that we're going to be able to do. And I am so excited and so grateful, and it really is just a week away.
Now, the Sharon you're referring to is Sharon Lindenberger.
Yes,
and
it is.
And if people want to contact her, they can contact her by phone at 519-851-3601 to reserve a space, or can contact her at slinden@rogers.com. And the first section you're going to be doing is June 3rd to the 5th, Awakening Your Creative Soul Intensive. And
yeah.
What's that going to be about?
Well, let me tell you, in general, it's going to be really about clearing out anything that's in the way of someone accessing their full creativity. Now, that means going into the energies of the bodies and clearing out stuff through a lot of playful ways, through music, through movement, through whatever the guidance is, that so we can start to access those parts of ourselves that are by design very creative and very imaginative. So we're going to be reminding people through a variety of ways that they are so much more than they've allowed. Let's just say that. So it's a very active experience. It's a great opportunity to let go of some resistances and to find creative elements within us and ways to express in a whole variety of ways. These are typically going to be writers, and so that is one profound way to do it. But there's also movement, and there's also voice, and there's also, you know, film and all the other areas that do access and come from the same creative spot that is within each of us. And so what we're going to do is just sort of peel the debris off of that source point and enjoy it in the process. So it's a 2.5 day.
That's going to be Friday, 7 to 10, Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., and Sunday, 1 to 6 p.m. at the Huron Room at Huron University College at the Western University. And once again, you can contact Sharon Lindenberger for more information. We also have June 10th to 12th. You'll be back at the same location here in college, Western University, doing Energetic Self-Care Intensive.
Yes.
And what's self-care, that about?
Yeah, self-care is one of the most critical elements that we all have available, and yet it's one of the things that most of us are dissuaded from doing. And it's not necessarily supported. If we give ourselves too much care and take care of ourselves, oftentimes we're considered or branded selfish, et cetera, et cetera. What I have found is that the more I take care of my energy, in other words, getting clear and clean, making sure that I'm well-fed, well-nourished, well-rested, well-taken care of in my thinking as well, then the more I have available to me to show up for somebody or something, and I am much more likely to be in my what's called my power than it is if I'm coming in with a lot of, I'm not taken care of. I come in a weaker energy because I haven't taken really good care of all of these parts of myself. And I found from this place of being really good at taking care of those personal needs, my personal processes, then I am able again to really be in my fullness. And I'm going to work with people to help them do that, and there's a variety of ways that we're going to do. Again, it's very active, very experiential. There is information because it's always important to give the mind something to hold on to while the body's playing. So it'll involve music, it'll involve the voice, it'll involve opening up of these parts of us that have been perhaps resistant to it, and just having a collective experience so they can walk out of there with actual tools and things that they can do in the comfort of their own space.
Well, once again, that's going to be June 3rd to 5th through 3 days. And it's going to be, again, at Huron College at the University of Western Ontario, right here in beautiful London, Ontario, Canada. And to register, you contact Sharon Lindenberger, 519-851-3601, or S. Linden, L-I-N-D-E-N, at rogers.com. And do you have a final word for us today, Mark?
I guess the final word is to really be open to what each of us truly is. These are really remarkable and profound times where energies are really supporting us to clear off the old stuff, clear off the debris, and basically stand in the fullness of who we are. And this is, in my opinion and in my experience, happening to everybody on the planet. We're being invited in many ways to wake up by a very powerful and loving energy that really has our best interest in mind. And I'm inviting everyone to, despite the forms and what's going on, as challenging as those are, to remember that something very beautiful and very empowering and very juicy is happening for us all, and to begin to see a higher perspective on what's going on and not take things at a first blush. It really is time to clear and to get back to that pure and beautiful child that we all are.
Thank you very much.
You are so very welcome. Thank you, thank you.
We've been talking with Mark Stanton Welch, live from California. He's coming to London, Ontario very quickly. He's a renowned music, sound healer, alchemist, teacher, and mentor, and we've enjoyed having him on our very first broadcast of Talking with VIPs, very interesting people. I'm Bill Paul. Bye for now. How was that, Mark?
Beautiful. Let me go ahead and stop the recording, okay?
Okay.